Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 16, 2022. War against concealment. What can you do if you understand with your mind how important it is to feel the greatness of the Creator, but it does not penetrate into your heart? Imagine that you go into the future world and see that there is only the Creator in it, none else besides Him, and that everything is full of His glory. This is the true form of reality that is revealed before us. We need to feel this form now in our state, in this world, so that this whole world of deception and concealment does not obscure the Creator from us. Try to do it. Try to build through your den such attitudes to everything that happens in the world as if there is no concealment, but only the revelation of the Creator, none else besides Him. This is what our prayer should be about. There is no other prayer other than for the Creator to be revealed as the only force in the world. Egoism does not let us escape its slavery, and it forces us to think about ourselves all the time and does not allow us to see anything else. All the degrees of the spiritual ladder that we have to climb lie in the fact that in every state we annul our egoism, which conceals the Creator's actions from us, and we instead reveal that He alone does all the actions. It was the Creator Himself who arranged such a concealment in order to teach us how to rise above concealment and reveal Him. After all, through our fight against concealment we acquire Kelim, which we do not have now, for revealing the Creator, restriction on our will to receive, the screen, and reflected light, or in other words, faith above reason, love for one's neighbor, which leads to love for the Creator. That is, we come to annulment of our egoism above which we establish the force of bestowal. We give the Creator the place to rule over us, and He is fighting this war with our egoism. We just need to make room for the Creator in our hearts. We all have made quite significant progress toward this state. It does not matter that the blitzkrieg does not work, but this is the demand of our time, which obliges us to pull the entire world after us. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, June 14, 2022. Writings of Rabash who hears a prayer. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, in response to Norwegian labeling, Israel should cherry-pick its goals. Norway has just joined the group of European countries that implemented a 2019 European Union and UN Security Council resolution that establishes an obligation to label products originating in Israeli settlements areas Israel gained control of in the West Bank and East Jerusalem in the 1967 Six-Day War, which are disputed by Palestinians, so consumers can make informed choices when shopping. The EU court's decision has long been viewed by Israeli authorities and manufacturers as anti-Semitic and discriminatory, since Israel is the only country singled out. Despite the fact that there are more than 200 territorial disputes worldwide, the labeling measure applies only to Israeli goods. Wine from the wineries in the Golan Heights, oil from the olive groves in Judea and Samaria, and a selection of fruits and vegetables from East Jerusalem exported to stores in Norway are labeled as coming from the Israeli settlements or from the occupied territories. It may be necessary to condemn such decisions, but in reality, there is no need to lose any sleep over it. Nothing will happen if Norwegians will not drink Israeli orange juice for breakfast or will not season their salmon with Israeli olive oil. Israel will know how to export and distribute its products all over the world. Also, there are shortages in many countries due to the war in Eastern Europe, so it is not difficult to market products where there is a demand. Scandinavian countries such as Norway, Sweden and Denmark already implement labeling practices for Israeli products. They have long been known for their anti-Israel stance. It is due to their nature and common spiritual root with Germany. They are also ideologically closer to the Arab world and lean toward them. fighting directly in international organizations like the UN or condemning the decisions of world governments like the government in Oslo is a war without any chance of winning. It's like fighting windmills. The reason is that behind the labeling of our wines and olives there is a deeper story. In the depths of their hearts, haters of Israel feel that we hold the key to their good future in our hands. Hatred of Israel is not a transient phenomenon, but a measurable law of nature. When we unite across all conflicts and disagreements, the hatred against us diminishes. On the other hand, when we are separated and emotionally distant from each other, hatred toward us grows in the world, and it strikes us again and again with bursts of antagonism, such as in the form of UN resolutions calling for labeling products from Israel. The correct spirit that should be created between us is a spirit of connection and unity, an Israeli spirit of mutual guarantee, which is the only force that is able to neutralize the negative forces against us. There are even stronger and greater forces between us, that even we are unfamiliar with, and even if the whole world were to slam the door in our faces and lock it with seven locks, by virtue of the spiritual connection between us, we could open it, or rather, induce our great enemies to open the door to us. We are a nation that carries within it the social idea of love your neighbor as yourself. Only a return to this love can eradicate the hatred of the world toward us. It's not about holding hands and singing in a circle like in kindergarten, but the feeling that should be in our hearts that we are connected in a circle like friends, united like a warm family, united like a nation characterized by reciprocal care and support. If we act in this way, we will become a light unto nations, a light that will pass to all the nations of the world, and that will not only bring about a change in the punitive Norwegian labeling, but change in every area in our reality. As it is written, the Israeli nation had been constructed as a sort of gateway by which the sparks of purity would shine upon the whole of the human race the world over. Rav Yehuda Ashlag, the Arvut, Mutual Guarantee. Be envious and be jealous. Question: today, many people are asking the question, which desires are mine and which are imposed on me by society? Why does society determine what is good for me if I feel inside that it is not good at all, at least for me? How can I resist this society? Are you saying that feelings like envy and jealousy are considered positive in Kabbalah? Answer: of course. They develop us. Imagine a child who does not look up to adults and does not want to be an adult. Unfortunately, he will remain undeveloped. Imagine scientists who do not envy each other and do not strive to outdo one another. Imagine people who do not compete and do not want to become richer, stronger, bigger, higher, and so on. After all this only makes us human and drives progress, otherwise, we would not have climbed down from the trees. Comment: but, while being raised, we were told all the time, being an egoist is bad. My response: no, it is very good. The term Kabbalah comes from the word to receive. The more a person wants to receive, the bigger he himself becomes. The whole problem is how he uses this natural quality. If it is given to us, by nature, it cannot be bad. Whether it is good or bad depends on our implementation. Therefore, children should be told, be envious only of what is good, and try to become greater than him. You see how well he does, and you do even better. You see how strong he is, and you become even better. You see how he can draw or something else, try it, maybe you can too. It is said, envy, lust, and honor take a person out of the world. Either they kill him, so to speak, or, on the contrary, raise him into the spiritual world, that is the thing. These are the strongest natural qualities inherent only in man. It all depends on how we use them, either to the detriment or to the benefit. There is an anecdote about the Decembrist granddaughter's view of the revolution. They told her, "We are making a revolution so that there would be no rich." She answers, My grandfather also wanted to make a revolution, but so that there would be no poor. That is, the difference is in the vector, where we are going, what we are heading toward, either good or bad. And the qualities themselves are the tools of our development. They should never be suppressed in a child. On the contrary, let him be envious, let him be jealous, let him be proud, it is all very good. All in all, they can be called ambitions. Big ambitions lead a person to something big. From Cab TV's close-up. Does the Creator exist? May 9, 2011. Armageddon is not what you thought. Comment: viewers of a clip in which you talk about Armageddon, about the end of the world, wrote in response, "It is easy to see that these two people have no idea what Armageddon is. Those who study the Bible know perfectly well that Armageddon will happen in the future because it is a war between God and Satan." My response: they are absolutely right. Comment: you said that Armageddon exists, the end of the world and this war in general is already happening. It is happening inside of us. This is a fight against egoism, which is rising and trying to defeat us. He says, this is a fight between God and Satan. Explain then what he said. My response: Satan, in fact, is the greatest human egoism that is within each of us, and it will always reveal itself more and more. God is that positive force concealed from us, which we must also reveal out of nature. As a result of our actions, we must reveal both God and Satan. Both of them will be revealed within each of us, and between us. This state is the war that is called Armageddon. This war is going on inside each of us. Where else can I correct my attitude toward others? Question: does it turn out that there is God in me and there is Satan in me? Answer: yes, of course. Satan is from the word sat, that is, the one who strays from the path of bestowal and love. The one who has strayed from the path is called Satan. Question: then the fight between God and Satan means getting him back on the path. What is the path of God? Answer: only toward common adhesion and support, toward such a connection that there is no empty space between us. Then the Creator is revealed within us. Question: does it mean that we need to be pressed together? Answer: yes, so that we live these feelings. Comment: you said that Armageddon is happening right now. My response: this does not mean that it is happening right now, and later it will not be. It is already beginning to manifest itself. Question: do you think that this is just the beginning? That is the fight still ahead of us? Answer: yes. Baha'u'llah noted that from the beginning of the 20th century onward we are entering the period of the last generation. Question: is it precisely the period of the war of Gog and Magog? Will it get worse if we do not understand it? Answer: it is going to get worse, but I think we can cope with all that and correct ourselves so that all the worst will turn into the best. Question: can we avoid the peaks of this war? Answer: undoubtedly. From Cab TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, April 25, 2022. The man ahead of his time. In our country, that First World War resulted in a new, historically unprecedented, form of statehood, not only in the realm of economic, but likewise in that of the aspirations of nationalities. From the point of view of the naturalist, and, I think, likewise from that of the historian, an historical phenomenon of such power may and should be examined as a part of a single great terrestrial geological process, and not merely as a historical process. Mankind taken as a whole is becoming a mighty geological force. There arises the problem of the reconstruction of the biosphere in the interests of freely thinking humanity as a single totality. This new state of the biosphere, which we approach without our noticing it, is the nous, Vladimir Vernadsky. My response: this is what Kabbalah says, only in different words. It is necessary to understand where Vernadsky suddenly had such an awakening from. He suffered tremendous shocks, he was unconscious for many hours and even days on the verge between life and death. It was his egoism, and not his body, that endured the strongest stresses. Not only on a spiritual, but also on a purely physiological level, such preconditions arose in him that he began to feel the delicate layers of the universe. Suffering purifies a person, raises him above egoism. Egoism, when experiencing pain, automatically shuts itself, protects us, not wanting to suffer. As a rule, when a bad time comes, we say, we do not need anything. We have something to drink, to eat. Let it just be peaceful, we do not want anything else. And when the good time comes, we are ready to consume everything, no, give us, the whole world. Vernadsky experienced a very stressful state when his rejection of egoism occurred at all levels of his being, both physical and moral. Therefore, he realized that the future existence of man and humanity lies precisely in that sphere. He called it the nous, where a person rises with his spirit above the body despite his egoism. This egoism, this so-called body of ours, not physiological, but internal, exists so that with its help we can transform into a completely different being, which will identify himself not with matter, but with his inner essence. Vernadsky experienced it inside himself during the loss of consciousness, during the rejection from his body, in all these sensations, which were quite strong and obvious, left him with very serious informational bases, which he then developed further. Usually, in a person undergoing these conditions, they are gradually erased. Vernadsky's were not erased. He is really a special man who experienced a way out of egoism into a completely different, supra-egoistic, spiritual state. Therefore, he was able to more or less describe the transitional and the next states of humanity. He had no conceptual, descriptive apparatus. After all, he was a geologist by profession and dealt more with inanimate nature. And he suddenly began to feel in it and through it the vegetative, animate, and human levels of nature. Thus, for him, all these levels turned out to be ascending to a state where he discovered that he was rising above our world. From CapTV's close-up. Prophet November 23, 2011. Parallel movement. Comment: in your blog you wrote that nature leads us along the path of evolutionary development until we become similar to it, and that the blows and suffering we feel are nature's reaction to our non-conformity with it. You say the only solution to all crises is to achieve balance with nature. My response: blows are a product of our non-conformity with nature, since we bring it into imbalance and therefore it comes into even greater motion. If we were directed correctly toward the goal, then all of nature would act correctly. We and nature must move in unison, including the inanimate aspect of nature. Within the earth, geological changes must take place. Inanimate, vegetative, and animate nature, everything must change. But if it would change together with us, toward the goal, then that is more favorable and is done in a good way. In the meantime, we see that this is unfortunately not the case. Because we are not going straight to the goal. Thus, we are causing all these problems and all these cases. Question: if these blows are intended to develop a certain sensitivity to them, then why are people today becoming more and more deaf to them? They no longer hear anything and they no longer care about anything. Answer: this is because it is not the blows that are the cause, we are the cause and our attitude toward them is actually the effect. Our callousness, our egoism, which is constantly growing, is the cause of the blows, and therefore we automatically become more indifferent to them. From CapTV's close-up, branch of Sekhara, May 15, 2011. Man and woman, the force of bestowal and the force of reception. Question: it seems that men have the quality of annulling themselves in relation to another for the sake of a goal inherent in them by nature. We see this in units such as military special forces and so on. Women do not have this quality. Women are individualists. Is it because they have different goals? Answer, yes, they have different goals and different methods of achieving the goal. Nature is very sharply divided into two parts, male and female. This division proceeds from the highest point from which everything is created, to the lowest element where everything is divided into plus and minus. Two opposing forces, the power of bestowal and the power of reception, work at all levels, in all worlds. Therefore we must take this into account when implementing the methodology of spiritual ascent to the next dimension. But for men it is somewhat different than for women. For men, it means joining a group, studying together, and sharing a common striving toward the light, toward the goal. For women, it is the individual help of each woman to men. They practically cannot be connected with each other. They create something like an association among themselves, but this association is nothing more than the joint exercise of assistance and support to men. Men can't move forward without it. It's not just something secondary. Question: are women more characterized by external relations? Answer: yes. The inner connection appears only later, when absolutely everyone comes together as a single image of a man and a single image of a woman, Adam and Eve. From CapTV's close-up. Does the Creator exist? May 9, 2011. To look at everything through the goal. Question: there are a huge number of interesting things in the world. How do you filter them so that some things do not lead you sideways? Answer: I always look at them through the goal to see how these things fit into it, me, the goal, and how the entire universe is between me and the goal. After all, it is not somewhere else on the side, but only between me and the goal. In order to feel the universe correctly, I need to see what I am observing now and the goal. Wherever I am, in La Scala or at the Paris Opera, in some museum or at the Greek Meteora, rock monasteries, I enjoy watching everything, taking it in, and for me it all fits into one mosaic between the upper world, our world, and the flow of humanity toward its final purpose. It is very interesting to me. I have been collecting this mosaic all my life. I do not have anything that would be just a separate fragment, it happened and is gone. I sort of collect my life. I have such a need for a sense of wholeness. Comment: if we look at the way the media distort events and how they present them. My response: now we are talking about culture, about history, although I am fitting it into my history, culture, science, and history. From the media comments, I extract what I need. Let's say there are 20 commentators in front of me. It does not matter to me whether they say correct things or not or whether they lie or not, I do not even look at that. I check to which comment I can give my methodology, and I take this comment. I am not interested whether it is right or not. Someone said it, and it is good enough. At least I can express something of my own inner remark to this, for example, in a blog. The main thing is that I took it as a kind of precondition. Whether it is right or not does not matter, and I expressed my point of view. This is what is important. From CapTV's I got a call. Architectural Monuments, May 25, 2014. Michael Leitman, on Quora: why do people pretend their lives are perfect on social media? We want to feel proud and better than other people, that they will envy us. Our egoistic human nature prioritizes self-benefit over benefiting others, making us want to see ourselves in a better position than others. We thus want to show others that we are special and worthy of respect, and we see what lengths we go to for respect. When our desires developed beyond mere survival necessities for food, sex and family, we then started comparing ourselves to each other, sizing up what we have compared to what others have. Then, our social desires for money, respect, control and knowledge developed. The desire for respect becomes a major problem as it is behind much conflict in the world. Whether it is a person's own pride or the pride of one group or nation pitted against others, where that person, group or nation wants more on their side and less or even nothing for the other side, then it becomes clear how our desire for respect, honor and pride brings about so much conflict. While we can identify the problems that come with this desire, what we need is not to try and make it smaller or eliminate it in any way, but to redirect it. That is to change what we respect. When society values people solely according to their contribution to society, we will then necessarily strive to think and to act in favor of society. If we get rid of the awards that we give for individual excellence, and instead respect each other for our concern that we express towards society, then we will want to win the respect of society by wanting to do good to each other. We will then gradually come to feel that expressing altruism or unselfishness toward one another is a special and sublime value in and of itself, regardless of the respect that we receive from such an inclination. In doing so, we will find that altruism is a source of perfect and unbounded fulfillment. Moreover, we will find that such an attitude is nature's comprehensive law, which controls and sustains us. Based on the videos, why do people pretend their lives are perfect on social media? And the needed shift in human consciousness with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Laitman. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Laitman. Michael Laitman, on Quora, what are your thoughts on those who aspire to be perfect? Perfection differs for everybody. For one person, Schwarzenegger represents perfection, while for another, Einstein does it for them. And of course, the list goes on and on for more and more people. It is all subjective. There is no perfection in this world. According to the wisdom of Kabbalah, perfection is something else entirely, that we reach a state of completing our place in humanity. In other words, when we become immersed in an inclination to support everyone as much as possible in order to bring humanity to its completion, then we can be considered perfect. We then experience perfection because our desire to bring humanity to perfection aligns with the perfect quality of the upper force, one of absolute bestowal, with no shred of reception laced within. We then become partners with the upper force in achieving the same aspiration. Also, we attain perfection through our connection and annulment to the upper force, which then starts acting through us. Behind our every desire for perfection, whether we want to be the next Schwarzenegger, Einstein, or whoever else we might picture to ourselves, or whether we simply want to have what we imagine as a perfect life for ourselves and our families, there is a deeper desire at play, a desire to experience the perfection of adhesion with the upper force. We ourselves can never be perfect, but we can adhere ourselves to a perfect force, and perform perfect acts through what we request from that force. Through our intentions and requests to adhere ourselves to the perfection of the upper force, we can also merit becoming perfect. The upper force performs the perfect acts, but we invite and request them in order to benefit humanity. Based on the video, is it realistic to aspire for perfection? With Kabbalist Dr. Michael Laitman and Aaron Levi. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Laitman.